From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of November 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Jackie Bakes about the commodity markets and Drew Lerner about the weather forecast. And along the way, we'll be joined by Gary Schnitke, ag economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, to talk about the impact MFP has or is having and may continue to have on cash rents and what should be done about that as those are negotiated at this time of year. And we'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, December corn today finished 4¾ cents lower, $3.62¾. The March at 373 at a quarter down a nickel. May futures down 5¼ at 379, and July at 384 at a quarter, 5¼ lower. December contract down 4¼ at $3.89. January beans 2¼ lower, $8.82 the settlement price. The March at 896.5 down 2¼. May down 2.5 at 910¾. And July soybeans $9.23¼. Down 2¾. November beans, 9.30¾, 3.5 cents lower. The bean oil futures down 15 cents, rather up 15, at 30.37. The bean meal, 90 cents lower at 293.80. July soft red winter wheat down 3¼ at 531.5. The hard red at 452.5. Down 4.5 cents. December live cattle futures $1.25 higher, finished at 121.40, 2.5. The February at 126.70, $1.25 higher as well. Feeder cattle up $1.70 in the January and the March. They settled at 143.32.5 and 143.92.5 respectively. And December lean hogs for the day at $60.67.5 per 100 pounds. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 11 points at 28.141. The U.S. dollar is up 0.149 to 97.885. And gold futures for the day at $1,453.70, down $6.60 for the afternoon. Now let's take a look at what happened in the marketplace here to help us discern this final trading day before the Thanksgiving holiday is Jackie Fakes. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with support and resistance today.
Yeah, they've changed a lot. It's been a rough week. When you look at March corn, support $3.62, $3.25, and $3. Resistance $3.82, $4, and $4.18. And we really need to close above $3.89 in the 8th to resume getting above the 62% retracement from the contract high to the contract low. On May, 375 support, 350 and 333, and resistance, 388, 404, and 421. Beans is where we saw the biggest change, of course. January beans support 872, 864, and 829. Resistance, 903, 921, and 941. The crossover is at 935 between the uptrend and the downtrend lines. And right now we're currently trading inside the pennant. Now, one of the things that's interesting is, you know, we've just been hammered on beans. There's no question about that. And the RSI now is down to 14.9. Now, if people aren't familiar with RSI, 50 is considered neutral, 30 is considered oversold, and anything below 30, of course, is really oversold. Now, I will tell you that there was a point in time when I did see corn go to 9 only, but we also see stochastics indicating, you know, low numbers. And most of this seems to be fund-driven by their attitude about China trade deal and South America. When you look at March beans, you've got support at 841, 814, and 758, and then resistance at 953, 988, and 1023.
Open interest, since we're looking at analysis, what does it show us?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, years ago, we could look at open interest from one day to the next and kind of get a feel for the direction of the market. That's not the way it is anymore. But I thought people might be interested in seeing what went on. We saw wheat go down 10,933 contracts yesterday on soft red. Hard red went down 7,179. Corn went down 32,710. Soybeans went up 22,548. Meal down 1844, soy oil up 1,060. Ultimately, everybody's saying, now, what does that really mean? Okay. Well, when you see corn go down, and on a day when corn is down, it means that you're shedding long positions. If you see beans up on a day when we're going down, it means that you're adding short positions is what you're doing to it. And it means the same thing for all the other commodities, too.
We're at that time of the month where we're thinking about deliveries against the futures contracts.
Yep. First notice day is going to be Friday. And, you know, if you are if you have a long futures contract after first notice day, you can be delivered on, which can be a very complicated and messy situation. And first, you know, deliverable stocks came about because they want to make sure. Ultimately, this isn't the way it's defined, but I believe it's they want anybody who's in a long position to get out because they have to make sure that there's enough deliverable stocks, real people who want to actually buy the corn to be able to make cash converge. And so it's a situation where I know a lot of times people don't understand that you need to do that, but you do. You just need to get out.
Let's turn our attention to some other places, Argentina and Brazil.
Well, you know, I still think, and I think that is a little bit of what's going on here, that we're going to continue to see aggressive selling coming out of there, especially in beans, because they expect that tax is going to get raised. They haven't announced that they're doing it yet. And on top of that, the peso is at 60 pesos per dollar. And so that's a great deal higher than it had been. It's a little lower than it was not too long ago, but it's higher than it had been. So because everything down there is priced against the U.S. dollar, if the peso is going down and the dollar's going up, that's a win-win for them all the way around. I think we're going to probably see more bean acres down there. That's another thing that's I think the funds are looking at, you know, and I know I mentioned this before, but I think it's still interesting that due to the tax situation down there, at one time we saw six times as many bean acres planted as corn. And I'm certain the funds are looking at that too and saying, holy cow, you know, now that Kirchner's back in, we might actually look at that situation again. When you look at Brazil, that's some interesting things there. The economic minister said that they are not going to support the real, okay? When the real dropped to 4.26 reals to the dollar, that gave the Brazilian farmer the best price in 5 years, which is just unbelievable. Now, the question is, it implies more selling that's going to pressure futures and maybe more beans being planted next season. But the big question comes down to the same question we always face here with our farmers, and that is, will they sell, or will they hold on for an even higher number? You know, this has been kind of a dream for them. They're in the same situation Argentina is. Well, when it comes to the farmer, this is a dream, not for the people who are not farmers. But with the U.S. dollar up and the real down, that is just like the perfect place. Now, they might need to import corn this year, Todd, which I thought was kind of interesting. They are just exporting corn like maniacs, and they have this livestock expansion going on, and now they've got all kinds of corn ethanol demand. And so if exports don't slow down, I would expect that we're going to, you know, ending stocks down there are going to get very tight, and therefore, you know, they may have to import some corn. Now, I think it's interesting down there, too, that we see the same thing there that we see here on the East Coast, because it's so expensive to transport grain from one part of the country to another. Sometimes it makes it cheaper to import it into northeastern Brazil, for example, rather than to truck it to it. And, you know, here in the U.S., we import corn sometimes out of South America, well, for a couple reasons, not because it is costly to get it there, but also because of the fact that there's such a tremendous competition for grain on the East Coast in the United States. But all the commonalities across the world are pretty amazing.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much.
Yep, and I want to say happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners and especially to you guys. And so you have a great day. Thank you.
That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke is now here, agricultural economist from the U of I's Urbana-Champaign campus. Hey, thanks so much for being with us this week. You've written an article on cash rents. Those are in the process of being negotiated or already negotiated, one of the two. But it's about this time of year that that happens. And you've been thinking about some historical cash rents in the state of Illinois, what those look like, and then how MFP worked into the last couple of years. Let's start with some history of cash rents, and you deal with Central Illinois, and I suppose those are coming right out of the FBFM records.
Yes, and they're pretty representative of what's happening all across Illinois. But essentially, since 2013, we've had flat cash rents. We've seen a little bit backing off of cash rents from their extreme highs in 2012 and 2013, but they've come down maybe $10 an acre, so that now we're running in Central Illinois something like $270 per acre as an average cash rent for high productivity land. The whole state would average something in the 240s. So, you know, the whole state, or if you take all the land, 30 bushels or $30 less than that per acre, but roughly stable since 2014. So
stable since 2014, but there's been a lot of variability in how much income there's been.
Absolutely. So, and so we've had some better years and some not so good years. Our best year actually during since 2013 was 2018, when we had $355 of operator and land returned to Central Illinois high productivity farmland. That was last year. And the two things that contributed to that higher income or return that year was exceptionally good yields and also $60+ of MFP payments. So 2018, we had $60 of MFP payments. Take that out, we would have reduced a farmer return after paying cash rent from $81 down to, you know, $18 or $19. So that $62, $63 average payment of MFP in 2018 was really, really critical in our income that year.
This year, the MFP should add up to more than that if the third tranche is delivered in January, and it would seem pretty likely that's the case, but income won't be that good.
Yeah, that's right. So this year, we are actually expecting more in MFP payments if we get the three tranches. Last year, you know, we had 60-some dollars in MFP payments. That was 2018, averaged across corn and soybeans. This year, we're looking at closer, something over 80 for most of Central Illinois counties. But $80 per acre, so $20 more, yet overall, we're expecting net return after paying cash rent in Central Illinois to be zero or minus one, really close to zero. What's causing that is the lower yields. So we have lower yields this year. So take off 25, 30 bushels less on corn, 15 bushels less on soybeans. You get lower returns. So even though we have a higher MFP payment, we're going to have lower returns this year.
Without the MFP, they would have lost money?
Yeah, absolutely. So $80, and we're at zero, so you would have lost minus $80. And that would have been the worst loss since we've been keeping these records in 2000 by a very large margin. So
what are your expectations for 2020?
So this is the big deal right now, right? So 2020, I guess I would still, you know, you could make the case that there will be an MFP payment in 2020, right? But they haven't announced it and or said anything about 2020. But if, you know, if it's in the same levels as it was in 2018, 2019, it's a really big deal, $60 to $80. So there's a lot of uncertainty about whether there will be an MFP payment and the size of that. So, and that's making obviously budgeting much more uncertain this year than is typical, because we weren't expecting MFP payments in 2018, and the administration said there wasn't going to be one in 2019 up to May, so of this year. So, you know, we got a 2020 situation where you could have an MFP payment or could not.
So that brings caution and concern both as it relates to cash rent for the landowner and the farmer. The landowner who is probably being asked to lower cash rent. The farmer who more than likely is saying, I need you to lower cash rent. How do you deal with it? Because MFP makes such a big difference.
Yeah. So if you're looking at our budgeting in our example for 2020, you'd say be saying we are looking at a -$30 to -$40 return in 2020, and that's given a return to, you know, trend yields. So if you add $80 to that, that's a positive return. If you don't get it, it's a really, really large negative number. What we're suggesting is that the farmers and landowners negotiate without the MFP payment in their consideration, come up with a cash rent that fair at that point. And then, you know, if we do have MFP payment, agree on a way to split that MFP payment. That way, you know, we cover our bases. The farmer isn't on the hook for negotiating with an MFP payment when one might not happen, and the landowner can share in the MFP payment if it does happen. So it's sort of, it adds a little bit of, it adds risk to the landowner by making that contingent, but that's sort of the place we're at right now.
Sounds like a variable cash rent.
Yeah, variable cash rents would be good in this situation. The variable cash rent, I would argue, you probably want to be putting MFP or other disaster payments in there. That's a new twist since we, variable cash rents are pretty recent. They've been around, but been used more and more here in recent years in disaster payments like MFPs, probably need to be included in those formulas because they do make, I mean, $80 and $60 in the last 2 years make a big difference on returns to farmers and landowners.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and I'll be traveling with him the week of December the 16th. You can catch up with us on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. All the details are online at willag.org and farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. We'll be in Mount Vernon on Monday of that week, and then we'll travel to Springfield, East Peoria, DeKalb, and back here to Champaign to wrap up on the 20th. Again, get yourself registered for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Catch up with Gary Schnitke, Todd Hubb, Scott Irwin, myself, and many others on that week to take a look at what's been happening in Illinois as it relates to agriculture and economics. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast for the holiday and next week, and of course for the Corn Belt. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, happy Thanksgiving, Drew.
Hey, same to you. Thank you very much. And I hope everyone out there will enjoy the day as well.
Yeah, so tell me about these two storms. One we're kind of in the middle of at this point, depending on where you are, I suppose.
Yes.
And then a second one that's coming.
Yeah, the one that's out there right now is focusing more and more on the Great Lakes region, although the wind from this event is still extended all the way back into Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri. And as we go forward through the rest of the day today, the storm will work its way into New England and portions of Ontario, Canada, and the wind will just gradually recede from west to east as we go through the evening and into the overnight hours. So by the time we get up tomorrow morning, it should be fairly calm across the Midwest once again. We might even have some abundant sunshine. It might actually be very pleasant again. But the second storm is a very complex system, and it is going to come out of the western United States. We saw a record-setting low-pressure center on the Oregon coast yesterday. It was the lowest pressure recorded since or in all time for the month of November. And very, very powerful storm that's produced some impressive snows and rain in the western United States. I think the Sierra Nevada is going to get 1 to 3 feet of snow. Well, that storm system is going to end up in the upper portions of the, well, the northwestern plains, we'll call it that, I guess, by the time we get out towards Friday afternoon. And the wind is going to howl with this event as well. But what's interesting is such a deep storm is pulling a lot of warm air northward, so rain will actually fall across a big part of the western Corn Belt and all the way up into the Canada-U.S. border area, around the Manitoba-Saskatchewan border area. So a lot of rain. There'll be a little freezing rain ahead of the rain, and then behind the storm will be a blizzard. And that's going to occur in Montana and Wyoming. It may be part of the western Dakotas. So those areas will end up with 6 to 12 and local 15 inches of snow, with a driving wind of 30 miles an hour, or probably gusts a little higher than that, and pretty nasty weather. Now, as the storm moves eastward, it's going to drag the cold air with it, and so the rain that's occurring in the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota down into the upper Midwest, will change over to snow while the storm begins to weaken. And by the time we get to Sunday, the storm will be about over, and we'll look for 2 to 6 inches of snow in the eastern parts of Dakotas and Minnesota. In the meantime, rain and thunderstorm activity will occur across the Midwest as we go from Friday afternoon into Saturday. We'll see some locally strong thunderstorms, maybe even an isolated tornado or two out there as the storm tries to move across the region. The good news, next week, we're back to tranquility. The weather will respond very quickly back to a warmer-than-usual mode for many areas in the plains and western Corn Belt, and no more storminess for a little while.
That will be indeed good news. I suppose the wind will blow the corn one way and then the other, if I remember correctly, between the two storms. So that'll be difficult enough. A little rainfall on that corn, which is still standing, or snow, either one, ice. That'll make things nice for producers who might try still to get in. I don't know. They'll have to have things freeze up eventually again in order to pull that off. So let's maybe turn our attention southward and look at Brazil and Argentina and get an update of your assessment of crop conditions there, please.
Yes. A storm that's been moving through Argentina the past couple of days has finally arrived in southwestern Brazil today, and it's producing some very good rainfall in an area that's been drying out here recently. The storm is going to work its way into the central crop areas of Brazil and then kind of stall out there. There's going to be multiple days of significant rain from Mato Grosso into Minas Gerais and portions of neighboring São Paulo, and these areas will end up with some potential for some flooding, believe it or not. Rainfall will probably run from 3 to 6 inches over the next week, and some local totals getting up close to 8, or maybe even a little more than 8 inches. So a very, very rainy period coming up for the interior southern portions of Brazil. In the meantime, while all that rain's persisting there, we're going to see a drying trend in Argentina and Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil. So those areas, we're going to see a steady reversal in the improving trends that have occurred in those areas here recently. And by the time we get to a week from now, we're going to be needing some more rain in Argentina. Outside of that, though, I don't think we're really going to be hurting too much in either country. It's all about what happens further down the road, and I do think timely rain will return to Argentina, and Brazil's excessive rains will diminish as we move forward into the heart of December.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.